say. All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is daf lamed. So we left off on Chavtes Amud Beis. So says the Gemara. Remember again, Abosai, we are now focusing the Mishnah in Luvav HaGozel introduced us. We're now discussing. We've transitioned from Sukkah and are now going ahead. We're now going ahead and focusing on some of the halachos of the Dalet meaning. So if you remember again, the Mishnah said that lulav ha-gozel v'hayyavesh, a stolen lulav or a dried out lulav, are both possible. Says the Gemara, kas pasik v'tani. The Gemara says this in a very kind of blanket, straight out way. Lo shna b'yom tov rishon v'lo shna b'yom tov sheni. Now, the Mishnah makes no distinction between lulav that is gozel or yavesh, whether we're talking on the first day of Yom Tov or the second day of Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Yavesh Hadar Ba'inon, Beleka. So I understand why Yavesh, why a dried out lulav, and we'll discuss, by the way, how dried out is dried out, but I understand why a dried out lulav is not kosher, even on the second day, because by Dalet meaning you need Hadar. You need to be beautiful, and that is lacking. Now we'll say, let's just talk about this for just a moment. If you remember again, yesterday in the Mishnah, so when Rashi commented on the reason why lulav yavesh, a dried out lulav, is puzzle, so Rashi quoted the pasuk actually from the Shira of Zekeliva Andeyu, that literally this is my God and I will exalt him. And the Gemara learns out from there, Hisna elefana b'mitzos. Go ahead and perform mitzos beautifully in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rashi said, therefore, because a dried out ulav is not beautiful, therefore it is possible. The problem with this, Rabbi says, take a look at the top Tosas. Just very quickly, Tosas says, Umefarish bi gemara mishum d'iskish lulav la'esrog, d'chsiv be'hadar. Tosas points out, Rashi, you can't be right. Rashi, why can't you be right? Because Rabosai, we know the concept of Hidr Mitzvah. Hidr Mitzvah means what? That you should do mitzvahs beautifully. The Gemara says, get a nice talis, make sure you buy yourself a nice mezuzah, sit in a nice sukkah. Hidr Mitzvah, what's the issue? If you don't perform Hidr Mitzvah, you have still fulfilled the Mitzvah. Hidr is an additional level of performance. You have the core level of performance, and Hidr takes it a step above that. So Tosa says, Rashi, you can't tell me that if a lulav is not Hadur, if a lulav is not beautiful, if there's no Hidr Mitzvah, that it's possible. Therefore, says Tosa, there's something else. Abosai, we will see this later on, but the Gemara equates, the Torah calls an Esrog a pre-8 Hadar, which means that the Esrog inherently, Esrog is a different kind of mitzvah. And that whereas with other mitzvos, Hidr mitzvah is kind of like a little bit of gravy on top. When it comes to Esrog, Hidr is part and parcel of the mitzvah. Tosis, this is Tosis, remember on the top of Chav Tesimut Beis, Tosis explains, not like Rashi, and Tosis says, we're going to see later on, that all of the three other meaning, the Hadassim, the Lulav, and the Arabos, are all compared to Esrog. To say that just like Esrog needs Hidr in its core obligation to go ahead and fulfill the mitzvah, so do the other items also need Hidr. So that's what Tosis brings down. So Machlokis Rashi Tosis. According to Rashi, Rashi understands Zekili Va'anveyu. According to Tosos, it can't be Zekili Va'anveyu simply because one, simply because Lemaisa, Zekili Va'anveyu is an additional level. Is an additional level, but it's not a core mitzvah. Therefore, he understands that it has to do with pre-8 Hadar. Fine. So back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Yavesh Hadar Ba'ina Valeka. So I understand why Yavesh, I understand why the dry lulav will be puzzle even on the second day of Yom Tov, because Lemaisa, again, Hidr is a requirement by lulav in all days of Yom Tov. However, Ela Gozel. But what about a stolen lulav? Bishlama Yom Tov Rishon Dechsiv Lachem. Mishalachem, so I understand why stolen lulav is not good. Why? On the first day. Why? Because Torah says, Ulakachtem Lachem V'yom Arishon. You shall take for yourselves on the first day. Meaning, on the first day, the lulav must be your property. So I understand why you can't discharge your obligation with a stolen lulav. Ela B'yom Tov Sheni Amailo. But why can't you use a stolen lulav on the second day of Yom Tov? Meaning, Rabosai, there is no obligation of Lachem. What the Gemara is highlighting over here, Rabosai, is understand the mitzvah of lulav is only mid'oraisa on the first day of Yom Tov. It's not the Oraisa on the second day. So the Oraisa of Lachem is only for the first day. Why can't I use a Lulav HaGozel on the second day? Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Mishum Tap of Lamid, Mishum the Harilei Mitzvah HaBa Ba'Aveira. Oh, because Rabbi said there is another issue. You're right. The issue over here is not Lachem. The issue over here is Mitzvah HaBa Ba'Aveira. That one is not allowed to perform a mitzvah when the performance of the mitzvah is only realized through the commission of a sinful act. Now, interestingly enough, where do we know the concept of mitzvah ba'aveira? So the truth is, even without a pasuk, you'd be tempted to say, it's intuitive. It's intuitive. You can't serve God by transgressing God's law. But it's interesting, the Gemara actually brings a proof text for this. Shene'emar, the pasuk quotes the pasuk from Malachi. And the Navi Malachi is giving Klal Yisrael Musar. And he says to them, V'havesem gozel, you bring stolen animals, v'esapiseach, and blind animals, v'esachola, and sick animals. So the Navi is going ahead and giving Musar to the Jewish people that even when they engage in karbanos, they don't do that appropriately either. So the Gemara says it's interesting, the grouping over here. Gozel, dumya depiseach. A stolen animal is similar to a blind animal. How so? Ma piseach lesli takanta. Just as the blind animal has no takanta, has no remedy. I will say, what does that mean? The blind animal has no remedy. Look at Rashi. Ma piseach ein lo takana. The acherzman lakribo shari mum kavua olamisu. I will say, what it means is there are different types of mumim. There are different types of blemishes. There's what's called a mum over, which means an animal can have a blemish that now will go away with time. And once it goes away, you could offer it up. And there's a mum kavua. A mum kavua means the mum is established. It's not going anywhere. So just like pisach, just like if an animal's blind, so that is a mum kavua, that mum is not going anywhere. Af gozul lesle takanta. So too, if the animal is stolen, it has no takona as well, meaning there is no way to remedy that circumstance. Look at Rashi. Af gozel. Yalfinan milei de'in lo takana la'acharzman. Va'afilu b'yeyush. D'shaminan lei l'morei. So actually, let's read the Gemara first. Talk about this, Rashi. Loshna lifnei yeyush. V'loshna la'achar yeyush. So I will say this is very interesting. So what the Gemara is picking up on is the following. The fact that Malachi chooses to group the stolen animal together with the blind animal indicates to us that the stolen animal is like the blind animal. Just like the blind animal can never be offered, so too the stolen animal can never be offered either. Now, what's the intriguing part of this? The Gemara says it doesn't make a difference if it's before Yeyush or after Yeyush. So what's Yeyush? Yeyush is when a person despairs of recovering lost property. Now, under normal circumstances, once an owner is miyayish, once an owner gives up hope, so the truth is the item essentially becomes hefker, and whoever has it, whether that's a thief or someone else, acquires it. Now, if it's a thief, he still has to pay restitution for it. But lemaisa, he would still go ahead and acquire it. So the Gemara says that stolen animal cannot be used for a karban, whether it's before Yeyush or after Yeyush. Bishlama lifnei Yeyush. So I understand why it can't be used before Yeyush. Adam kiakriv mikem amrachmana velav didehu. So we'll say you can't use a stolen animal prior to the owner experiencing Yeyush. Why? Because the Torah, when it speaks about sacrificial law, says Adam kiyakriv mikem. This week's parasha. Adam kiyakriv mikem. When a person will give from among you. So what does that mean? The Gemara understands mikem means it has to be yours. V'lav didehu. So if I stole an animal and the owner has not yet been miyaish, then what? Then what? It's not mine. It's still the owner's. I understand that. Ella achar yeyush, hakanye b'yeyush. But Rabbi say after the owner has been miyaish, I, the thief, have acquired the animal. Meaning, Rabbi say again, it's an interesting idea that a thief acquires, under certain circumstances, a thief acquires the item that he stole. Now, remember, just because you acquired the item does not mean you don't have to pay back. You still have to pay back. But you might not have to pay back the object itself. You might just have to pay back the value. So why, if I stole the animal and the owner was miyaish, essentially that is my animal, why can't I bring that as a karban? So the Gemara says, Mishum da habilei mitzvah haba ba'aveira. Why? Because that is called a mitzvah that is performed through the commission of a sinful act, which is not an acceptable mitzvah. So also, interestingly enough, the Gemara understands that, so to speak, the proof text for the concept of mitzvah haba ba'aveira is in fact this pasuk from Malachi. Again, the fact that Malachi compares the stolen animal to the blind animal tells us that just as the blind animal is permanently disqualified, so too the stolen animal is permanently disqualified as well. I understand why the stolen animal is permanently is disqualified before Yeyosh. Why? Why? It's not mine. It has to be Mikem. But why is it disqualified even after Yeyosh of the owner? And the answer is Mitzvah Haba Ba'aveira. So this becomes, again, the proof text, so to speak, for Mitzvah Haba Ba'aveira. First of all, just take a quick look at Rashi. Rashi says the following. Rashi just defines Yeyosh over here, and he says, Af Gozel, Yafina Mina De'elot HaKarlachas, Ma'afil B'Yeyosh, D'Shamina Le'le Marei. What does Yeyosh mean? You hear the owner of the object say, D'Miyayish V'Amar, Voy le l'chisaron kis. Woe to me, oi, woe to me that I've lost this animal. When an owner says something like that, that's indicative of the fact that he, in fact, has given up hope of ever retrieving it. Fine, back to the Gemara. But so both sides. So now what the Gemara suggests, just follow the train of thought. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following. So a lulav hagozel will be possible even on the second day. On the first day, it goes without saying that it's possible. Why? Because l'kachtem lachem. It has to be your lulav, and it's not your lulav. But the truth is, there's a secondary reason that would help on the first and all the subsequent days, which is what? Mitzvah haba ba'aveira. Now, both say, the reason why mitzvah haba ba'aveira helps even on the first day is why? Because both say, let's say again, I steal a lulav. I've been eyeing Ruvain's lulav since he picked it out at the shul sale. I wanted that when he got there before me. He puts it down. I steal it, and I hear him say, oh, I'm never going to find it. See, he's miyayish even on the first day. So, Altzlochem, I can fulfill my mitzvah. Why? Because he's miyayish. Mitzvah Abba Ba'avera says, no, you can't. So therefore, Mitzvah Abba Ba'avera can work on the first day, but even aside from we're not worrying about the first day, because the first day has its own disqualification of Lochem. But Mitzvah Abba Ba'avera tells you that even on the subsequent days of Yom Tov, where there's only a rabbinic mitzvah of Lulav, you still can't use a stolen Lulav. But Amar Yochanan Mishurim Mishurim Yochai, my dichsiv, what's the meaning of the pasuk? Ki ani Hashem ohiv mishpat, sone gezel ba'ola. What's the meaning of the pasuk in Yeshayahu? That I am God who loves justice. I despise theft by an ola, which literally sounds, I despise sacrificial theft. The Gemara gives an interesting mashal. It's a very important mashal. Mashal melech basar v'dam, shayover abes hameches. So we'll say the Gemara gives a mashal of a king who was passing by his toll booth. So the king, excuse me. So the king was passing by his a toll collection booth. And what happens? Amar la'avadav, tenu meches l'mochsim. So the king says to one of his attendants, do me a favor, pay the toll. Amru lo. So the servant said to the king, excuse me, sire, halo kala meches kulo shalchahu. You don't exactly have to pay the toll. It's your toll. You don't have to pay toll. Listen to this. Amar lahem, mimeni yilandu kol ovrei drachim. Let me set the proper example, very profound mashal. Let me set the proper example. If I pay the toll, below yavrichu atzma min ameches. So if people see that even the king pays the toll, then what? Then it'll teach them to pay the toll as well. Afa kodesh baruch hu amar. So too God said, Ani Hashem sone gezel ba'ola. I am God, and I despise theft when it comes to sacrifices. So what does the kodesh baruch hu mean? Mimeni yilam du banai. What's interesting is the following. If I steal an ola, if I steal a car, and I steal an animal and offer it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, technically speaking, it should work. Why? Because everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. So what does it matter, again, if it's Reuven who offers it? It all belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu anyway. So in essence, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm telling you, I despise theft. Even though, again, I don't have to despise theft because it's all mine anyway, I still despise theft. And if I, God, who owns everything, despise theft, so to you, mankind, who does not own everything, should despise theft as well. Itmar nami amar Rabbi Ami, yavish pasul mishum mipnei she'in hada. So we'll say, and remember, we're trying to figure out the psul of the two cases in the Mishnah. So yavish, if the lulav is dried out, that is pasul for use on Yom Tov. Why? Because of hadar. Oh, because ultimately, again, it is not beautiful. It does not satisfy the proper halacha criteria of beauty for sukkis. And gozel, and Gozel will be possible because it is a mitzvah haba ba'aveira. Upligid Rabbi Yitzchak, and this argues, and Rabbi Yitzchak argues on this. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmani, Amar Shmuel, lo shanu ela biyom tov rishon, that we only learned that the psul of Gozel that the psula was stolen is only on the first day. About Yom Tov Sheni, but on the subsequent days of Yom Tov, mitoch sheyotze b'shol, yotze nami b'gosel. But Rav Asa, on the subsequent days of Yom Tov, says Rabbi Yitzchak, since you can be yotze with a borrowed lulav, you can also be yotze with a stolen lulav. Now, Rav Asa, this is an important yisod, which is, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says mitoch sheyotze b'shol, dehab Yom Tov Sheni lo ksiv lachem l'mi'ute. On the first day of Yom Tov, so the Torah says Lachem. Lachem means it must be my lulav. Now my lulav means literally that I must have all ownership rights over that lulav, which means that if I don't have a lulav, I cannot borrow a lulav from someone. The only way to be able to discharge my obligation with someone else's lulav is how? To own it. They actually have to give it to me. They have to give it to me. Has to be matana. There's an interesting discussion we'll see in the postgame as to whether or not you could give a matana a manas lahachzir. There's a concept in other areas of halacha of giving a gift, but the gift is conditional upon the return of the gift. So there's a whole shine in the postgame as to whether or not that works by lulav, because does that really satisfy the criteria of lachem or not? So we'll get into that. But what's clear is it has to be mine. That obligation of lachem does not apply on the subsequent days of Yom Tov, which means that on the second day of Yom Tov, if I want to borrow your lulav, I absolutely can. So says Rabbi Yitzchak, the fact that I can be yotze with a borrowed lulav indicates what? That I can be yotze with a stolen lulav as well. Now his logic behind that is that lemaisa, again, because there's no need for personal ownership on Yom Tov Sheni. If there's no need for personal ownership of Lulav Yom Tov Sheni, then technically speaking, I should be able to be yotze with Gozel as well. Let's see. Masiv Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak raises a kasha. And he says, one second. Lulav HaGozel HaYavish Pasol. What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that a stolen Lulav or a dried out Lulav is Pasol. Hashol Kosher. But yet we can infer from the Mishnah that the Mishnah allows the use of a borrowed lulav. So the Gemara says, Amos. So when are we talking about? What is the Mishnah, or what case is the Mishnah referring to over here? When would a person be borrowing this lulav? Amos. Ilema b'yom tov rishon. If you want to say that it's talking about the first day, Yom Tov, that can't be. Haksiv lochem. Torah says it must be yours. Mishal lochem. You must own it. V'hai lav didehu. And I both say again, if I am borrowing a lulav from another, that is not mine. El lav b'yom tov sheni. But rather, it must be talking about what case? The case of sho'ol, where sho'ol works, must be a case of yom tov sheni. And yet, the katani gozel pasul. So both say, Nachem Bar Yitzchak brings a very interesting diyuk from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah only says that a lulav ha-gozel and a lulav ha-yavish is possible. So the inference is, but shol, but a borrowed lulav is, you can discharge your obligation. Can't be talking about the first day. Why? Because everyone's agreeing that on the first day you can't use a borrowed lulav. So the Mishnah therefore must be referring to second day and on. And yet what? It still says that a stolen lulav is possible. So that's a contradiction to Rabbi Yitzchak. Because Rabbi Yitzchak wanted to say from second day and on, since you could use a borrowed lulav, you can also go ahead and use a stolen lulav. So the Gemara says, it's interesting, the Nesorah Sashas changes this to Amar Rava instead of Rava Amar. Amar Rava, li'olam b'yom tov rishon. No. In reality, the Mishnah is referring to the first day of Yom Tov. The first day of Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, v'lomi boi kamar. And Rabbi said, lomi boi is a stylistic approach of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah will sometimes say A, and once I say A, it's not even necessary to say B. What does that mean? V'lomi boi kamar. Lomi boi sha'ul delav didehu. It goes without saying that on the first day of Yom Tov, you can't use a borrowed lulav. Why? Why? Because it's not yours. Aval gozel. Ema stam gezela yeyosh bailemu ukididei dami. Oh, well, so this is very interesting. Very interesting. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that lemaisa, the fact that I can't use a borrowed lulav on the first day, that's pashit. That's pashit. Ulekachtem lachem, it has to be yours, and a borrowed lulav is not yours. The havamina is that a stolen lulav should be good. Why? Because he says stam gezela yeyosh bailem, which means what they're both saying. That under normal circumstances, when you go ahead and you steal an object, most times when objects are stolen, what happens? Owners despair of recovering the object. Look at Rashi. Ema stam gizela. Rashi says miyad. Ba'af agav de lo shaminan de isyayish, de iyayish. See, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is I would have thought stam gizela. Generally, when an item is stolen, see, what did Rashi say before? When does yayish take place? What did Rashi say before? When? When the owner says, oi, oi, I'm not going to find it. So the Gemara says, I might have thought, the truth is, it's not true. Stam igzela yayush. Under normal circumstances, as soon as an object is lost, most times, people despair of recovering it immediately, even before they actively say anything. Rashi says, yayush bailamu, shari befanov who goes lo miyado, ve'ein koach lahatzil. Why? Because more often than not, the owner is powerless to try to retrieve his object. So I might have thought like this. I might have thought that lemaisa stam gizela, a regular case of theft, immediately results in yeyush. And I will say that actually works well for us in our case. Why? Why does it work well for us in our case? Because if I steal a lulav, and most times we say stam gizela yeyush bailani, then what does that mean? What does that mean? The owner has relinquished his ownership over the object, which means that what? I, the thief, am now the owner of the lulav, which means I've stolen, I'm a thief, but I am able to satisfy the criteria of lachem. So the havamina is that whereas everyone agrees that shaul should not work, I would have actually thought that guzzle does work. But again, I will say, this havamina that guzzle does work is predicated on this notion of stam gezela yeyosh bailim, that under normal circumstances, theft immediately results in the yeyosh of the owners, kamash mala ukididei dami, and therefore again, once there's yeyosh, it's as if I, the thief, own it, and therefore I satisfy the criteria of lachem. Kamash malon, that we don't hold this way. Look at Rashi. Now, what does it mean? What's the kamash malon? Rashi says kamash malon de'ad de'sham inon de'iyayish lo karnali. So both say the kamash malon is not in the din of lulav. The kamash malon is in the din of yeyosh. Kamash malon, no. We don't hold stam yeyosh or stam gezel yeyosh bailim. We do not assume that yeyosh is taking place until when? Until when? Until we hear the owner articulate his feelings of hopelessness of recovering the object.
So is that only by lulav, or that's a general?
Oh, that we'll have to see. That we'll have to see. Kamash Malan Rashi is the adisham inan the yayish lo kanile, that until we hear the owner actually express his yeyosh, the thief does not acquire it. Demeimar amar hashduhu de takif minai lemachar tafis nale bedina. Because the owner will often say, it's true, you know what, the thief is stronger than me, but tomorrow I'm going to take him to court. Tomorrow I'm going to take him to Beis Din, and I will use whatever legal means at my disposal to be able to recover my property. So for Rabbi Sai, that's so the way the Gemara is understanding it now is that the Havamina of the Mishnah was like this. The Mishnah is talking about Yom Tov Rishon, and a Yom Tov Rishon is when Guzzle, Yom Tov Rishon is when Shaul is possible. Everyone agrees that Shaul is possible because, again, there's no Lachem. But the Havamina was that Guzzle should have been good. Why? Because Stam Gezele Yeyush Bailim, Kamash Malon, we don't hold Stam Gazela Yeyush Bailim. Therefore, when I steal that Lulav on Yom Tov Rishon, I do not acquire it because we do not assume that Yeyush has taken place until when? Until we hear the owner actually articulate those feelings of Yeyush. So the Gemara tells an amazing story. Or not an amazing story, but a maisa. Amaluhu Ravuna Lahano Avankari. Ravuna said to these Avankari. Now, what are Avankari? Rashi says, Togre Koldavar Lehistakir Bo. Kigon, Kalim, Kitanim, Machtin, Umasrikos, Lulavin, Vikofarin. So Avankri are merchants, or probably better stated like peddlers. These are people who try to make a parnasa selling all kinds of wares. So what do they make a parnasa with around Sukkis? Lulavin Esrog. So Rav Huna said, now these were Jewish merchants. So Rav Huna said to the Jewish merchants, Kizavintu asa me'akum, when you purchase the asa, when you purchase, we'll say asa ar hadasim, when you purchase hadasim from the Gentiles, apparently, again, the merchants used to purchase the hadasim from the Gentiles who own fields. When you purchase it from the Akum, Rashi says, kizavinti asim minachrim, kishetiknu hadas minachrim la'agol banash lahoshana. So when you go out and you purchase the hadasim for the purpose of the lulav bundle, lo tigzu ason, don't cut the hadasim off the bushes yourselves. Rather, ela ligzuhu inu v'yahavalechu, let the Gentile owner of the hadasim cut the hadasim for you and give them to you. Okay. So the Gemara says, my time up. What's the reason? Stam ovdei gochavim gazloni ar osaninu. Because stam Gentile landowners, chances are, they stole that property from someone else. Okay, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Ligzizu inu." Rashi says, "Heimichatchum in amechubar v'yitnu lachem." So let the Gentile landowner give you the hadasim themselves. My time is tam akum gazli ar asam yisrael inu. So it's actually interesting. Rashi adds in Yisrael. That what happened is we're concerned that what? That it was commonplace that you had non-Jews who were stealing land from Jews. See, even though, again, the non-Jew says that this is his land, so there's a strong possibility, or there's a possibility that this land was stolen from a Jew. Therefore, Rashi says, V'shema osakar kam Yisrael. Now, the truth is, most of the Mefarshim disagree with Rashi and say it doesn't really matter if it was a Jew or not. The issue over here is stolen property. So whether the property was stolen from a Jew, stolen property, to a certain degree, does not make a difference for us. What Rav Huna was saying was the following. He's saying to the Jewish merchants, listen, when you go to buy the Hadassim, don't cut down the Hadassim yourself, but rather have the Gentile, quote-unquote, landowner cut it down and give it to you. Now, what's the pshat? So, Amadeh. So now, what are we concerned about? We're concerned that this is stolen property. The karka eino nigzelas. Now, both sides. The problem with land is that land cannot be stolen. Now, why can't land be stolen? Take a look at the top Rashi. Karka eino nigzelas. Kilomar eino kinuya legata. Now, both sides. When we say that karka eino nigzelas, what that means is that whereas other objects, when a thief steals it, the thief could actually acquire the object. Land is never acquired by the thief. That's what it means. It's not stolen. It never becomes the property of the thief. Eina kinuya legazlan b'shum yeyush d'li'olam b'cheskas ba'aleh. Because land always remains in the chazaka, literally in the domain of its owner. D'mikroy nafkalam b'hagoza basra b'nizakin. Ava mishenitla. Okay, so most guys, listen to this. So the issue is the following. That lemaisa, the avankri are going to go to buy the hoshan. It's going to go to buy the hadassim. And what happens? The asok season is going to go buy the hadassim. And what happens? The issue is that the hadassim may become from stolen property. So Rav Huna therefore says, don't cut down the hadassim yourself. Have the Gentile landowner cut down the hadassim. Now, what does that do? So the Gemara says, first of all, issue number one. Excuse me. Is that karkas ain't an exelus. I will say that, which means land is not stealable. You can't steal land. Land remains under the domain and the ownership of its owner. Therefore, what's the issue? The hilchach ligzazuha, listen to this. Hilchach ligzazuha inu ki hechi dilehava yeushbailim biadayu dido. Suppose I listen to this. So therefore, Rav Huna says, let the Gentile cut down the hadassim. Why? Because when the Gentile cuts down the hadassim, both sides, there's no yeush on the land itself, but there is yeush on what? There is yeush on the produce, so to speak, right? Which would be the movable property. Once you detach something, there is yeush on produce. The owners absolutely have given up any hope of getting any of the produce. The most they can hope is that one day they'll recover title to the land. So there is yeush on the produce. And now, when the Gentile goes in and cuts down the hadassim, so what happens? There is yeush b'ilam. And where does yeush b'ilam take place? It takes place in the hands of the Gentile. Biadayu dido, v'shinui rishus biadaychu. And then there is a change of domain when the Gentile owner, so to speak, gives it over to who? The Jewish merchant. Now, I will say, what the Gemara is focusing on over here is there's a fascinating discussion in Halacha as to, here's what we know. We know that when a person steals property, it is possible for that property to become the property of the thief. The Shaila is, what steps are necessary for it to become the property of the thief? So it's a machlokas. Some say all you need is yeush b'ilam. Some say all you need ultimately is the owner to give up hope of ever recovering the object. Others say you need yeush b'ilam and shinui rishus. Shinui rishus means you need a change of the domain. That it has to be, not only could the thief take it, but there has to be yeush, and then it has to transfer out of the thief's domain. Once it transfers out of the thief's domain, then it can become the property of another individual. So what Rav Huna seems to be advising these avankari is like this. The hadassim is on stolen property. And therefore, again, lemaisa, if you go ahead and you cut down the hadassim yourselves, let me just tell you what he said, and then we'll go through the next steps. So therefore, tell the Gentile merchant, I want you to cut the hadassim off the bushes. Like bushes? It hasn't grown bushes. And I want you to go ahead and cut it off the bushes. When the Gentile cuts it off the bushes, there's Yeosh Bailim. There's going to be despair of the owners, because again, this general despair of the owners of recovering any of the metals, any of the produce, in the hands of the Gentile. And then once it transitions into the hands of the Jew, that's a Shinui Rishus. Therefore, says Rav Huna, by the time the Hadassim get to your hands, we're good. We're good. You're going to be able to use those Hadassim. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says, we're in the middle of that Rashi, Vekarka in an exelis. Rashi says, I'm three lines into that Rashi. Avamisha nitla shapri havigezo vatosho hu goes low. Hilchach, so therefore the issue is, if the Jew goes ahead and cuts down the Hadassim himself, then the Jew is considered as if he's stealing from the property. Hilchach ligzazua hein min amachubar v'yitnu alachem. Therefore, let the Gentile cut down the Hadassim and let him give it to you. Shiyiyu heina goes lanin. Let the Gentile be in violation of theft. Va'atem lochim osa mehem. And you are purchasing the Hadassim from the non-Jew. Va'abailim nisyashu kvar mikala peros. The owners have already given up hope of recovering any of the peros, any of the produce. Va'havi yeyush etzlam. Therefore, again, the yeyush takes place while the Hadassim are in the hands of the Gentile. And then the Gentile hands it over to you. And that's a Shinei Rishus. There's a change of domain from them to you. Vikasavar. And apparently, again, Rav Huna holds Vikasavar. Yeush Greda Lokani. Rav Huna apparently holds that Yeush by itself is not enough to affect acquisition. Aval Yeush Vishinei Rishus Kani. But Yeush, coupled with a change of domain, has the ability for the final party to acquire it. Vi'inami. Kani mitzvah ba'ave, Rabbi. Imatem techatu min amachubar tiu atem gozlim. Or the other issue is, even if it's not an issue of Yeush, or even if Rav Huna we say doesn't require Yeush and Shinei Rishus, there's an issue of mitzvah ba'aveira if you cut down the Hadassim yourselves. Okay.
It's
so the Gemara says.
Not the other way?
I'm sorry?
It's not the other way.
What's the other way?
It's not if the boy cuts it down?
No, because then again, by the time it reaches the Jew, it's totally mutter.
Totally mutter.
Correct, correct. This just happens to be the case of Hadassim. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Sof sof, ki gazazu unk iv avankri lehavu yeyosh bailim biadayu vishinui harishus biadam. So what I says the Gemara, I understand. But remember, the avankri are doing what? The avankri are, remember, the avankri are reselling these Hadassim. So why do you need the non-Jew to go ahead and cut it down? Very simple. Let the Avankari cut it down. It's Yeush, therefore it's Yeush Bailim in the hands of the Avankari. And where does the Shinui Rishus take place? When the Avankari sells it to the end user. And it's fine, meaning the goal is that we want usable Hadassim. To which the Gemara says, no. Lo tzvicha bahoshana da Avankari gufayhu. To which the Gemara says, no. Because remember, the Avankari are Jews as well. And therefore what? They need Hadassim as well. How do the Avankari? So what Rav Huna was saying, you're right, is Avankari for the Hadassim that you want to go ahead and sell to someone else. In a chinami, technically speaking, you could cut it down yourself. You could cut it down yourself because it's Yeyosh then in your hands, and it's Shinui Rishus when it gets to the hands of the end user. But Avankari for the Hadassim you need for your own lulav, I'm giving you the process. You have to have the Gentile go ahead and cut it down. That's Yeyosh Bailim. And then when he hands it to you, that's Shinui Rishus. So the Gemara says, Viliknuya, Vilikniyuha, Bishinoi Maisa. Why don't you acquire the Hadassim Rabosai in a different way? Look at Rashi. Liknuya Bishinoi Maisa, Sha'agad Shloshes Haminin Yachad, Bishinoi Maisa Namikani. So, Rabosai, here's what's interesting. Here's what's interesting. The first of all, look at Rashi just beforehand. The Adon Rashi says Didon Halokino Samehen. Actually, let's move on. So the Gemara says like this. Why don't you say like this? Shinoi Maisa. Rashi says Shagid Shloshes Haminin Yachod. The Shinoi Maisa Namikai. Both say here's what's interesting. If you hold that Yeush by itself is not enough to create ownership of the person that has the object, it's Shinoi Rishos is not the only thing that helps. What else helps? Shinoi Maisa. Shinoi Maisa means, Rabbi Osai, if you do something with the object that changes the object, that's also a way of acquiring that. Let me give you the I think the paradigmatic example of this is, if I steal a beam, and I take that beam and I build it into my house, even if I do tshuva, and I have to now return what I stole, I have no obligation to return the beam. What I have an obligation to do? To return the value of the beam. Why? Because once you change the object, by definition, you have acquired it. Says the Gemara, I don't understand. Lemaisa, I should acquire, meaning I will say, so remember what's happening over here. Rav Huna is saying to the Avankari, listen, you need to go ahead and you need to have the Gentile cut it down. So therefore what? It's Yeush in the hands of the non-Jew. And then Shinoi Rishus in the hands of the Avankari. So by the time it gets to the end user, Yisrael, totally fine. But you could cut out some of these steps. Because the truth is, even if you were to go ahead and cut it down yourself, Jews were to cut it down themselves. But what? So that's Yeush Bailim in the hands of the Jew. If they just take that Hadas and what? You bind it up now into your Lulav, then what is that? That's Shinoi Maisa. You're now changing the object. And once you change the object, lemaisa again, the object is acquired by the end user. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe Rav Huna holds kasavar, lulav ein tsarach eged. Rav Huna holds that, Rabosei, we'll see this again later on, that the lulav need not be bound together. So if the lulav need not be bound together, then what? There's no shinoi maisa. Bim tinsalomar lulav tsarach eged. Thus, maybe you'll say that, no, even according to Rav Huna, lulav requires to be bound. However, again, it's not a good shinoi. Why? Because shinoi hachozer lebriyasohu, or shinoi hachozer lebriyaso, lo shmei shinoi. Because also, maybe you'll say like this. Even if you say that lulav does have to be bound, that is a change that is reversible. And halacha lemaisa, a change that is reversible, is not called a change for these type of acquisition purposes. Look at Rashi. Hachozer lebriyaso, Matir Agdan, because what does it mean it's reversible? So what happens? You untie the knots, and ta-da, what do you have? Vaharehein kabirishona. The hadasim are back to where they were beforehand. To which the Gemara says, V'liknye b'shinye Hashem. Why don't you acquire the hadasim simpler through a change in name? Shavuot say, you don't, not only shinoi rishos, and not only shinoi maisa, but a change in identity also serves to affect acquisition. After all, in the beginning, this object was called an asa. The hashta, and at the end, top of lamed aleph, the hashta, hoshana mikra. Excuse me, hoshana mikra, hoshana, hoshana. And now it's called a hoshana. So that's interesting. In the beginning, it was called an asa. Now by Sukkot, it's called a hoshana. Rashi says, hoshana karele, Hashem sherigidon la'ogdon la'hoshana bechag. Because ultimately, again, it's called Hoshana. Why? Because we bind everything together to shake it on the Yom Tov. To which the Gemara says, Me'ikara nami la'asa Hoshana kare. Well, that doesn't work because Rav Osai, even before Sukkot, people call a Hoshana, people call a Hoshana an Asa. So Rav Osai, therefore, what comes down over here is that Lamaisa, Rav Huna's logic stands. Rav Huna therefore says to the merchants, here's what you should do. Go ahead and instruct the Gentile to go ahead and cut down the hadasim themselves. That way, again, it's Yeush Bailim, right? The owner's despair of ever retrieving the object while it's still in the hands of the Gentile. When the Gentile hands it over to the Avankari, to the merchant, then what? Then that's called Shinoi Rishus. And I've also said already at that point in time, that's good enough to allow the merchant to use it. And we take it even one step further because now it goes from the merchant ultimately to the Jew. And by the time the Jewish end user gets it, there's no problem at all. And I'll both say, I'll tell you something interesting. Just in the few moments we have. The Pnei Yoshua is Rabbi Yoshua Falk. I think I mentioned to him before. In his introduction, the Pnei Yoshua writes that he wrote the Pnei Yoshua. There was a terrible disaster in his city. There was a fire that broke out. The Pnei Yoshua was buried under rubble. His wife died. His daughter died. And as he's sitting there under the rubble, he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you save me from this disaster, I will write a sefer, Aliba de Hilchosa, that is really focused on bringing conclusions to the Gemara. That's the Pnei Yoshua. So Yoshua Falk writes over here, he says the following. He says, V'hanira la'anias daiti be'inyon zeh. Haynu mishum deblav hachi yesh ledaktik b'chal hashak levitar deshmaitin. My kashya luhu aliba de Rav Huna. Da shapir kam. So we'll say, listen to this. So the Pnei Yoshua is bothered by this whole discussion. Because at the end of the day, why would Rav Huna ever sanction using potentially stolen hoshanas? Like, what's happening in this discussion over here? Rav Huna is saying, listen, we know the property is stolen. The property is stolen. So I'm going to tell you how to be able to use hadasim from stolen property where it's still discharge obligation. What are you talking about? First of all, again, we know in halacha, there is a big no-no about doing any kind of business with anyone who is in potential, who is a thief. Why? Why? Because that creates the market. So the Rav says, what's going on over here? What Rav Huna should have said is, if you know that the property is stolen, what's the halacha? Okay. Stay away. But there's always somebody in Muncie. Right? I'm saying, right? There's always somebody who's going to sell you, to send you the vacuum pack. Right? So what are you doing? Why are you even doing this? So the Pnei Yoshua has a very interesting insight. Pnei Yoshua says, no. Ever al karchal ki depreshes pesamoch, devadai ein kan shum iser gezela mamish. Da stam einon ela mi'uta, de mi'uta, u'mehechi teisi nechoshlah. So also it's very interesting. Right? So what the Pnei Yoshua was saying is like this. If you know that property is stolen, you may not purchase anything from that property. What's Rav Huna saying? Rav Huna saying is, there's a shmua. I've heard in the past that there is a possibility, a remote possibility, that some of these lands may be stolen. Which lands? I don't know. Who stole them? I don't know. So Rav Huna is saying is, I have absolutely nothing to base my, I mean, I don't have enough to tell you that it's actually stolen, therefore you should stay away from it. What I'm telling you is, I've heard that there is some kind of remote possibility. So Rav Huna is saying, because there's some remote possibility, let me tell you how to deal with the halachic realities in a case of remote possibility of theft. Again, I will say, the Pnei Yoshua is clear. Had Rav Huna actually known, bivados, what was stolen, who it was stolen by, again, the halacha is very clear. Can't use it. No way, shape, or form, even if you employ some type of multiple halachic step system that allows you to be free and clear from theft, we don't touch that. Rather, what Rav Huna is advising over here is, in this case of extreme suffix, highly removed suffix, here's what you should do. Here's just the halachic safeguard. Tell the Gentile, again, I don't know if the Gentile is a thief or he's not. If I know he's a thief, I'm not doing business with him. I don't know he's a thief. And Rav Huna, again, even if I know that he's possibly a thief, then what? I don't know that these lands are the lands that he stole or he didn't steal. And obviously we're talking about a case where I can't be mavara, I can't clarify what the actual metzias is. In this case of multiple layers of suffix, here's what you should do. Just tell the Gentile to cut it down. So God forbid, should there be a possibility of theft, Yeush Bailim takes place in the hands of the Gentile owner. When the Gentile owner then hands it over to the Avanku, then what? That's Shinoi Rishus, right? Shinoi Maku, Shinoi Rishus. There's a change of location, a change of ownership. And now ultimately, by the time it gets to the end user, it's totally free and clear from any potential halachic issues. All right, then we'll stop over here. That wasn't the suffix. You only worry about that people did something if there's a suffix about it. There was no suffix about Jews stealing property. There was a suffix about why? Because it was a suffix is rooted in some type of reality. The reality was such that Jews weren't stealing property. Gentiles were stealing property. Yeah, I'm saying it's not a question of why. That was just the metzius. That was just the metzius. My understanding is